similar to this digital photography and many other innovations that came from the internet, what often happens is that in this case, right, the technological innovation is actually paired with a business model innovation. And it's actually the business model innovation, not the technical innovation, that is the most disruptive thing to the industry. And I think that that is definitely true in the case of crypto and Web3, is that yes, the technical innovation is really exciting. No, the technology is actually not that hard, but the business model innovation is what is actually the most disruptive thing. And that's what's ultimately going to make things the most challenging for incumbents.
That was Ian Lee. Ian is the co-founder of Syndicate, an investing protocol and social network. Syndicate is revolutionizing investing by changing how communities and capital work together through accessible, effortless, and social Web3 technologies. Syndicate recently launched a Web3 investment club, which turns any wallet into a Web3 native investing DAO. In this episode, Ian provides his insights on DAOs, what they are, and how they fit within the Web3 ecosystem. Ian also shares more about the various tools that Syndicate has created to simplify DAO formation, coordination, investments, amongst others. While Ian has been in this space for almost a decade and has seen it go through various transformations, he, however, has a more balanced take on those changes as well as how things might evolve. I really enjoyed his pragmatic perspective, and I'm sure you will too. Without further ado, here's Ian. Hi, Ian. Welcome to the Onchain Medley podcast. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show. I'm excited to learn more about you and Syndicate and all the things you're going to be chatting with us about today. Yeah, let's just kick it off and start with your background and foray into this world of Web3, blockchain, crypto.
Sure. So I've been in crypto and Web3 full-time professionally for 8 years. I started in 2014 when I joined Citigroup's venture arm called City Ventures in Palo Alto. And was tasked initially with looking at Bitcoin back in 2014, and pretty quickly realized that what I was looking at here was not a cryptocurrency, but in fact, the foundations of an open fintech stack. And when I realized that, I knew that this was going to be a really big deal, even though I didn't have a clear picture of how it would develop over time. Now, during that era, I guess, for 3 years, I was the head of crypto and blockchain across the bank globally. I led a lot of our internal and external initiatives. During that time, I also helped IDO start a crypto division in 2015, joined that in 2017, helped spin out a venture capital fund focused on Web3 and crypto investments in 2018, and was the co-managing partner of that venture fund for 4 years, where I invested in and helped incubate over 80 startups in the crypto space. And in 2020, started working on my own idea with someone that I had met actually while I was at IDEO 4 years before that. And eventually that turned into Syndicate, which we then spun out in the beginning of 2021, which I've been focused on for the last year.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that background. When you were just talking and you mentioned that you were working in the bank and working on crypto and blockchain, I know there's been a lot of talk about banks, their reception towards this whole technology, but do you have any just quick thoughts on that? Do you think people are becoming more open to it? What was that reaction back then? How have you seen it change? Just curious about that.
Yeah, I've lived through a lot of different transformations, I guess, of how banks and incumbents have viewed this technology as it's evolved over the last almost decade. When I first got into the space in 2014, the party line among the banking sector was that this technology was a fraud and that it was going to go away in a matter of months or certainly years. And I think that the thinking and the mental model for traditional incumbents, whether banks or even technology firms now, as this technology has evolved from Bitcoin to Ethereum to blockchains to, you know, more broadly Web3, is that this technology is really different and it's here to stay. And I think that the traditional banking sector, my, you know, former company employer included, like Citigroup, have come to realize that. And in many cases, even as early as, you know, this year, they've set up digital asset teams across the bank to understand where the opportunities are, where the capabilities are that they need to build for the future. and are trying to, as best they can, adapt to this technology revolution that is starting to happen in Web3 and crypto. I'm not particularly optimistic that they're going to be able to figure it out, to be honest. This is a classic innovator's dilemma. This is very much like prior kind of technological and business model disruptions that have happened over decades in the business area, namely like the rise of, frankly, the internet more than 20 years ago. And so I think that this is honestly like the Kodak moment for the banking sector. And I think that, in my opinion, few of them will be able to successfully navigate that transition, unfortunately, over the next decade or more.
Interesting. That's some interesting insights. Following up on that then, where are you in this whole sort of division between Web2 and Web3? Like, do you think those banks, let's use them as an example, will be around and have a place in society? Or do you think they'll eventually just have their, as you said, Kodak moment where they fade and they get replaced by blockchain technology, DeFi, and all the other just financial applications of the blockchain potentially?
Yeah, it's something that I've thought about for many, many years, both as a, I guess, member and employee or executive at a bank, as a venture capital investor, and now as a startup founder in Web3. And I think that the answer to that is a little bit nuanced. So first of all, this technology revolution is not the same as, for example, digital photography, like, you know, in the case of Kodak. That said, I think that the disruption is just as, if not more profound. It just may take a little bit more time than digital photography. So that's number one. Number two, though, is that similar to this digital photography and many other innovations that came from the internet, what often happens is that in this case, right, the technological innovation is actually paired with a business model innovation. And it's actually the business model innovation, not the technical innovation, that is the most disruptive thing to the industry. And I think that that is definitely true in the case of crypto and Web3, is that, yes, the technical innovation is really exciting. No, the technology is actually not that hard, but the business model innovation is what is actually the most disruptive thing. And that's what's ultimately going to make things the most challenging for incumbents. And if you look at traditional disruption history and innovation history over many, many decades, what usually happens is that the business model innovation ends up changing the ecosystem and the landscape of players. It doesn't mean, for example, that there will not be banks or the equivalent of banks in the future. I don't believe that, for example, this technical utopian dream of banks, for example, or at least the functions that they provide, completely going away and being completely automated on the blockchain, that's going to happen anytime soon. I mean, certainly in my lifetime, at least, and potentially more than that. But that said, this technology and the business model disruption that is enabled by it is going to fundamentally change the roles in this new system. And what is critical, I guess, for an incumbent is to understand what those roles are and to build for those future roles and functions. And what it means is that those roles are different and they are going to have to remap their organization's capabilities and business models to those new roles. And that is going to be the hardest thing, I think, for incumbents to do, is to build capabilities or build for new roles that in particular have business models that don't seem particularly attractive in the near term because they are very different business models and very different things in the long run. And that's going to be the hardest thing actually for incumbents to do, is to successfully navigate that transition because the business model changed.
Huh. Fascinating. That's really interesting. And speaking of, you know, business models, one aspect of business model that's been proposed or is taking shape in this Web3 world is DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations. Can you just share a little bit more about why that is? Why is a DAO important? Where do they fit in this Web3 ecosystem? And what do they enable that we weren't able to do before?
So I think one of the most interesting lenses to DAOs is that DAOs, unlike other crypto technologies or technology innovations that came from crypto and Web3, is fundamentally a technology that not only coordinates financial capital on the internet natively and on these blockchains natively, but it also coordinates human beings on the internet natively along with that financial capital. So if you look at a lot of the innovations that have come out of Web3 over the past decade, right? First Bitcoin, then smart contract technology, then scaling solutions, then privacy solutions, then DeFi, decentralized finance solutions like decentralized exchanges and automated market makers, lending models, then more recently, you know, things related to NFTs and whatnot. Most of these technology innovations have been primarily about moving digital assets or moving financial assets from, you know, one place to another seamlessly on the internet. But what they haven't been doing, at least really intentionally, is coordinating human beings along with that financial capital or those digital assets. And that is what I think DAO technologies ultimately represent, is that it is a social financial technology that natively enables human capital and financial capital to be coordinated seamlessly on the internet together. And I think that that is really profound because the world is not just financial assets. The world won't just be digital assets. There is a tremendous, obviously, amount of human capital and social capital that exists in our world. And it's actually when that comes into the Web3 space via technology like DAOs, where this technology starts to do things that previously it could not. And so I think that if you look at DAO technologies as this, you know, human financial capital technology, it has a variety of applications. Obviously, the one that we're focused on in the near term is how it could reinvent or reimagine investing, which is fundamentally in of itself a financial and human process. But there are many other applications, including, for example, like the future of work and organizations themselves, where a lot of different communities in Web3 are now starting to use DAO technologies to coordinate human resources to work on things and be rewarded for those financially in ways that the traditional, I guess, architectures like, for example, corporations or LLCs or other things are not as efficient at in terms of natively operating on the internet. So I think that there's, you know, so many applications of DAO technologies when reframed this way. I'm a big believer, having been in this space for, you know, almost a decade, that DAOs could be one of, if not the most profound technology to emerge from Web3, at least for the next decade.
When I think about DAOs, one of the things I always wonder about is just how difficult it is to coordinate human beings together towards a goal at any level. And I'm not really sure how DAO really answers that or solves that. And I'm just curious if you have any thoughts there. I know there's the tokenomics of it all, but to me, I'm just like, it's really hard to get a bunch of people to do something. Whereas in like a traditional corporate structure, it's clear you're exchanging your time for dollars in a way, shape, or form. And I know it's sort of similar to DAO, but I still don't understand how it's different. So can you just help me grasp that a little bit better?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the central questions in terms of how and where DAOs get adopted over what time scale. I think that if you look at the origins of DAO technologies, it originates from the original DAO in 2016, which was this, you know, global DAO on Ethereum that was trying to invest in projects in Ethereum, you know, globally. And it was a not only a really ambitious project that ultimately had unfortunately a technical bug in the code that resulted in its failure, I guess. But it was also really ambitious in terms of how many human beings it was trying to coordinate at once. And I think that a lot of the explorations and projects that emerged after that during what I would consider like the DAO winter, almost like phase two of DAOs from 2017 all the way up until, frankly, like, you know, this year, are mostly like these kind of generalized DAO tools and infrastructure for coordinating many, many people on the internet at once, trustlessly. And I think that what, you know, has been learned or is being learned from those pursuits is that it is very difficult, to your point, to coordinate hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of people on the internet together in a trustless way. And I think that there's a lot of great work that has been done and is being done to help figure that out. But at the same time, I think that in terms of DAO technology's applications practically, I guess, in the world, in my mind and in our mind, it starts a little bit differently. It starts in smaller groups as opposed to bigger groups. And so what we've been seeing on our side here at Syndicate is that a lot of DAOs actually can extend all the way down to even a group of a couple people or a few people. And a lot of these groups are actually group chats. They live oftentimes on Telegram or WhatsApp or Discord or even an email thread, or maybe they even exist in the real world. They're like a group of friends and whatnot. And what they want to do is just more seamlessly coordinate their activities in Web3 via kind of a DAO construct. And what often happens is that there's actually a lot of social trust embedded in these little groups. They actually are typically not trustless, meaning these people know each other really well. They have years and years of relationships behind them. And so there's actually a lot of just trust embedded in this, social trust embedded in these groups. And what they're looking for DAO technologies to do or more seamlessly kind of coordinate their activities, like, for example, specifically investing activities natively on the internet together very, very easily. And so what oftentimes happens, like for Syndicate's DAOs, which today anyone can start an investment club with their group of friends on Ethereum right now by transforming a wallet into an investing DAO, is that what happens is that like a group of friends in a chat, they say, hey, let's start an investment club. Let's buy some NFTs together, or let's invest in some Web3 projects together, which they may already be doing kind of ad hoc today, oftentimes kind of recording that very manually and painfully on a spreadsheet offline. And so what they do is they create a DAO and Syndicate to do this. They run it very easily, cheaply, and efficiently as a DAO and Syndicate, but they handle all of the communications and the governance decisions actually just within their Telegram chat or their Discord group. And that's sufficient actually for running this small little DAO. And I think that that model, actually, we were finding scales to many groups, even above just a few people. Like, we have some DAOs that are, north of 20, 30, 50 people, and they're just running it completely via Discord, and it's very efficient and painless. Now, I think that beyond that, right, when we're talking in the hundreds or thousands, that's where things get pretty complicated. I think that there's a lot to be learn there. There's a lot of great experiments out there. From like a market perspective, it may still be some time until, we've figured out, or the industry has figured out, like what the best practices are for DAOs in the hundreds or thousands of people. I don't think we're there yet. And so we're trying to learn as much as we can with the rest of the industry. We're trying to contribute our learnings as much as we can with the rest of the industry, so that over time, when DAOs are able and ready to scale to the hundreds or thousands of people and effectively reimagine, I guess, the traditional corporate or organizational model like an LLC or C Corp, that will be figured out by them. But I think that, for example, some of these DAOs that are more in the thousands or tens of thousands, those are working well primarily for particular applications of that, namely like open source nonprofit management of an open source protocol. People refer to them as like protocol DAOs or whatever, or protocol treasury DAOs. And I think that that's okay. That's working fine. I mean, there's still a lot to be learned there, but I think it's everything in the middle between like, these smaller group chats to like 10,000 person protocol treasury DAOs. That stuff in the middle is actually very difficult, and there's still a lot to be learned there.
Yeah, I definitely agree that keep it in small. I totally see the value, and it makes a lot of sense. But do you think that we'll eventually get to a point where we'll need to have a DAO for hundreds of thousands of people? Or do you think that it will eventually be capped where a DAO is inefficient past a certain number of people? Or is all that still to be determined?
I think the honest answer is it's still to be determined. But what I would say is that our perspective on this is that it is going to be much more complex than just a monolithic DAO, whether it's on the small side or on the large side. We actually think that what people think of as quote unquote DAOs today will actually be multiple DAOs in the future, meaning or implying that there's actually a constellation of DAOs that are purpose built for different things. And they will be able to somehow work together as a network to achieve kind of shared purpose and shared mission. And I think that that is very likely where things are headed. What the exact end state and what the exact sequence of components to that future will be is to be determined. But that's what we and I think a number of other teams are trying to figure out.
Gotcha. One of the things I've always tried to understand is like, so what's the seed that leads DAO to be formed? And, you know, there's some examples of like the Constitution DAO, you know, that got together to try to buy a copy of the Constitution. Obviously, they were unsuccessful, but I always just wonder, like, why did we have to create a DAO for that? And then there's Spice DAO, which bought a copy of the Dune novel, and they didn't have the rights to maybe make movies or content out of that novel. Like, do you just have any thoughts on there? It just seems like everyone's starting a DAO, but I'm never really clear on why. And do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm not super close to what's going on there, but I mean, I don't think that, for example, like, you know, Spice DAO's challenges or whatever are specific to DAOs. I think that, as you mentioned, like with respect to copyright and the ability, the permission to use that IP, that's a very like legal thing in the off-chain world that is just a legal thing. It's not like a DAO thing. And so I think that, you know, taking a step back from all of that, I think the thing to learn, I guess, from things like Spice DAO and other things is where is this technology going to be the most useful and the most valuable in terms of being applied? Because I think that in certain scenarios, DAOs are maybe at best like an incremental improvement, like a 1 to 2x improvement, or maybe even like a negative 1 to negative 5x improvement, depending on what it is. But I think for other, you know, certain applications or use cases, it is maybe not even a 10x, but potentially 100 to 1000x improvement over traditional systems. And I think that, like, for example, with respect to Constitution DAO, which members of our, I guess, our team were involved in helping support, kind of like guide, I guess, Constitution through that process, is that Constitution DAO, you just can't imagine that existing in the traditional world. I mean, how would you do that in a matter of days without kind of DAO technology? I mean, you would have to set up a nonprofit organization. You would have to somehow set up a donation mechanism or mechanisms by which to coordinate, you know, people on the internet and capital on the internet seamlessly. It's in all likelihood inconceivable that a Constitution DAO or something like that would have been able to be spun up as quickly as it could have been and raised as, you know, much capital and donations as it could have without DAO technologies. Now, did it figure out kind of, you know, all the stuff on the back end to figure out how to place a bid on Sotheby's in the real world and take care of all the kind of like the tax implications and how that would impact like their bid amount? No. And that's one of, you know, many learnings from that exercise. But I think that, like, you know, Constitution DAO and but more importantly, like other applications, it are like 100 to 1000x improvements over traditional systems. Like, you know, the investment clubs, for example, that we launched on Syndicate or with Syndicate is, we think, like 1000x or more improvement, because now it allows any group chat, basically, of friends or community in Web3 to spin up an investment club with their fellow friends and community to invest in the things that they care about. And so, for example, you know, 50%, actually more than 50% of the DAOs that we had been working with prior to the launch last week were women-led or all women DAOs. And what they're doing is they're spinning up really quickly to invest in more women founders and to bring more women into Web3 and investing. Now, arguably, they could have done that in the traditional world without a DAO technology, but DAO technology, and, you know, and are specifically like in the investment club space, is 1000x more efficient, to the point where it enables these groups to spin up basically within a minute. And as a result of that, it lowers the barriers to entry. it improves access, democratization, and availability of these tools for communities like theirs to start to, you know, take action and coordinate. And as a result, it increases diversity, increases creativity, and increases the number of people that can be a part of, you know, whatever community or industry they are trying to serve, which in this case is, you know, bringing more women into Web3 and into the investing industry in particular.
Yeah, I saw that. That's so cool. Thank you for sharing that. And I agree. I think it's definitely lowering the barrier to entry and access. And I think that's great. But I also see it as a double-edged sword. Just because it's so easy to do it, that means people are going to sort of do it for some of the wrong reasons. And you're going to see a lot of fallout till we eventually start getting some better signals that sort of tell you when a DAO is necessary versus when you're better off just not doing one. So that's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that. As you're talking, one of the things I started thinking about, just given how it's lowering the bar to entry and accessibility, is like we're going to eventually have a discovery problem where there's going to be a billion DAOs and no one's going to really know which ones to support or how to get involved. And just because given you're in this space a lot, are you seeing any sort of tools that are being generated for discovery and access, or is that still all too early?
No, I mean, I think that we've been anticipating that this would happen as tools like Syndicate and probably others, you know, start to really take DAOs more mainstream and make them easier and more available to people. I mean, I think that we've already been anticipating that. We're already seeing that even on our, you know, on Syndicate's network, even, you know, less than a week post-launch. And I think that we have already been starting to think through what that means and what new problems start to emerge, as well as what new opportunities start to emerge. I think on the problem side, right, like to your point, there becomes a discovery problem and, you know, there become too many of these things. So obviously that creates some challenges. But on the kind of like glass half full side, I think that what becomes now possible is actually the opportunity to surface communities that previously were not even a thing. And now via kind of different discovery mechanisms, as you mentioned, are now able to be surfaced and have now pathways to start to rise up and start to grow in terms of visibility and impact and all those things. And so I don't know how long it'll take, you know, us or other people to kind of figure that out. I mean, I think that it's still very nascent, but I'm pretty certain in the next, you know, year or two that, to your point, these discovery mechanisms will start to exist and actually create pathways for, you know, communities and different movements to start small and you know, get the I guess support and attention that they deserve as they grow and become, I guess, a bigger part of the different spaces that they're trying to support and occupy. And I think that is fundamentally a good thing, because traditionally, especially like the investing world, right? You know, there were no pathways for different communities to be a part of the investing process in the technology world. And I think that because of that inability to access that capability, that tool set, that community, a lot of people have been, you know, excluded from technology and investing. And that has led to things like inequality. And I think that the world wants something different. And I think that with DAO technologies and other things, I think that now there are pathways for that to start happening.
Yeah, I definitely hope so. I really, you know, everyone keeps talking about the promise of Web3 and how it's going to help with making things more equitable. And, you know, it's still early and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm just hoping that we eventually get to a point where it's a little bit more equitable than what we have today. So I'm optimistic that things will change, hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's why I entered it 8 years ago. And the only way that's going to happen is if people build for that. So we view ourselves as part of that, but there are others. And so I'm optimistic that folks like us and others will be able to figure that out and crack that nut. Because otherwise, who else is going to do it?
Yeah, fantastic. I'm glad you're thinking about that. So then moving forward a little bit then. So I know Syndicate DAO allows a lot of people to come together and form a DAO, but just talk really quickly about the process of forming a DAO. Like, how does that whole process come about?
I would say that we've developed a particular tool that we launched last week for investment club, Web3 investment clubs, as we call them. And the process for creating that is typically a lot simpler than like a big DAO. So like if you're creating like a really big DAO in the hundreds or thousands of people, there are a lot of different purposes for a DAO of that scale. And depending on that purpose and that DAO of that scale, it can be really, really difficult. And the pathways to how to do that can look very different. And so I can talk about that. But I think like for us in particular, with what we call Web3 investment clubs, which are this actually model that has existed for hundreds of years. Investment clubs have existed before Web3 and even the internet, where it was often like this group of friends in a community. Maybe they met up at a community center or they met at a restaurant. The first one was actually in 1898. And I don't know what they were doing. Like maybe they were investing in horses together. I'm not really sure. But traditionally what investment clubs have been are these like groups of people that come together. They like hang out. They talk about like often stocks or real estate or whatever. And they like pool their assets and they buy, they invest in things together. And that model is a traditional model. Like you can go to the SEC's website and look at all the kind of ways that they define it. Investment clubs, at least in the US, interestingly, if they meet certain requirements, they're actually not considered funds or security offerings and therefore not regulated by the SEC. And so we've basically modernized investment clubs for Web3 because now with DAO technologies, these investment clubs can run natively on the internet and invest in internet assets that are being developed natively in Web3. And so what does that mean? Well, oftentimes for an investment club, just like in the real world, they're often friend groups that have been already in place well before they want to create an investment club as a DAO and syndicate. And so they're often group chats, right? As I was mentioning, like 3 people, 5 people, 10 people, sometimes a little bit more. And what they'll do is they'll say, hey, like we've already been maybe buying NFTs together because, we collect NFTs, or we've been investing in different Web3 projects or startups or tokens together. Why don't we just formalize that in the form of an investment club on Syndicate as a DAO and just do that? So what they could do today is they'll just go to syndicate.io. They'll open the application, one of the members of that little group will connect their wallet or connect a wallet. Like it can be a multi-sig that's, owned by multiple members of that group. And they will utilize our protocol to create an investment club on Syndicate as a DAO. And that process, takes less than a minute. Like it's a few clicks. Like what is the name of your club? How many people do you want to can be a part of it? And then basically just hit button and the DAO gets created on top of that wallet. And then what the community or that little group can do is now immediately start utilizing all of these tools that are unlocked as a result of turning that wallet into a DAO in Syndicate and start clubbing their assets together, investing their assets together, and managing their assets together. And so what Syndicate opens up are things like tools that, for example, simplify clubbing assets together, automate a lot of the asset management and portfolio management of what that club invests in. So it like visualizes in real time what tokens, what NFTs, and what startups that club is invested in, manages the cap table, automates kind of like reporting of different transactions. We've even like made it as simple as possible for investment clubs on Syndicate to, for example, utilize legal documents that were developed in our teaming with Latham Watkins for investment clubs so that if these investment clubs also want protections in the real world, they can get that. So they can utilize our document signing tool. They can also, via a partnership that we have with a fintech called Doula, get legal entities, EINs, bank accounts, make state tax filings or state compliance filings, do annual K-1s and tax filings really easily via Doula so that it just takes all of that kind of burden off of them. So we just want to make these tools as simple and as easy to use as possible. And so, you know, for investment clubs specifically, that's what different groups can expect. And, you know, it's not, you know, like, for example, they need to copy code and know how to deploy an ERC-20 contract and all this other stuff. Like, we just make that as simple as possible so that groups can focus on what they, you know, do, which is invest together, as opposed to like building all of this from scratch, which is kind of a pain and you know, somewhat complicated.
That's neat. Thanks for walking me through that process. That's really cool to see that. Sticking on the Web3 investment clubs that you just talked about, do the investors need to be accredited? And also, is there a minimum amount that is required to open a investment DAO and syndicate?
Yeah, so I'll take it in reverse order. So the cost to start a DAO and an investment club on Syndicate as a DAO, it's just the cost of gas. We, you know, this tool is free. We think it's really important actually that the tool is free, because if we're going to democratize access, right, we need to make it as widely available as possible. So, you know, typically with Ethereum gas fees, that can range anywhere from 100 to sometimes, if, you know, there's a lot of NFT stuff going on Ethereum, it can cost up to like $300 in gas. But, you know, that's relative to other, like, you know, comparable tools. That's actually either, you know, in line or even more efficient. So that's the only cost. And then obviously, if you want like a bank account, legal entities, tax filings and stuff like that, like you can directly pay Dula and our partner Dula, and they'll take care of that. Which, you know, they have like a different pricing schedule for their services. But that's pretty much it. So as far as like a minimum, there is no minimum. It's just like, you know, you probably don't want to start an investment club for $100 if it's going to be like $200 of gas, right? As far as unaccredited, non-accredited or accredited investor, that's much more nuanced. So you can have members of an investment club who are non-accredited, interestingly, and that's totally fine. That's true about investment clubs in the real world, not just in Web3. However, if an investment club is going to invest in something that requires that investor to be accredited, then the investment club and all of its members also need to be accredited. So where does that apply? That typically applies in the case of like investing in startups, right? When you invest in a startup, the startup often asks you to represent that you as an investor are an accredited investor. And in those scenarios, right, the investment club and all of its members will therefore need to be accredited as a result. And so, you know, it will really depend on what the investment club is investing in. But that said, like, just like in the real world where these investment clubs that meet up in community centers, they can, you know, trade ideas about investing in different stocks, which are securities, and other things, right? Same thing is true about investment clubs in Web3. Like, they can, you know, buy NFTs and buy, invest in tokens and other things. I mean, obviously, like, they should, you know, check and understand with their own lawyers, like, what, you know, they should and shouldn't do. But, you know, that is fine. And so it really just depends on what they're investing in. And so, that's why we, you know, we advise and strongly encourage that all investment clubs, you know, check with their own counsel to just double check to make sure that what they're trying to do is permissible according to, you know, various accreditation rules.
And speaking of just some more rules, like, what are your thoughts on, you know, legality and DAOs? And do you think DAOs will eventually be their own sort of entity and recognized as such? I know Wyoming has a rule now that allows that to happen, but are you seeing any movement in the regulation side?
I think that there's a lot of great stuff happening with, like, for example, Wyoming DAO law. You know, there are a lot of really smart people that are, you know, really pushing the edges in terms of, you know, recognizing DAOs, I guess, as their own kind of entities. And this, I'm sure, is going to not just happen here in the US, but also globally. And I think that we're now, or will certainly in the coming, you know, months or years, start to see countries start to move in that direction. I think the reality, though, is that, you know, the law is pretty complicated and it moves at its own pace, right? And so I think that what that means is that a lot of DAOs that are going to be created are ultimately, in the near term at least, until we have like more clarity from different states or countries, in the near term, they're likely, whether we like it or not, going to be force fit into some existing regulatory or legal framework for an organization. And that process will force fit DAOs according to their purpose, intent, and also how they're designed and operate. And so some of these DAOs will look actually like, for example, corporations. Some of them will look like investment companies. Some of them will look like nonprofits and a variety, a whole host of other things. And so I think that my view, which may be a little bit too pragmatic, some might feel, is that in the near term, it actually is important to consider what is the best legal structure or legal structures that exist today for DAOs based on their purpose. And actually, rather than try to work around that, try and work with that. Because in my opinion, and I think this is true for how we're thinking about it, syndicate, I don't think that it's the right thing to kind of assume that DAOs are this different thing, because that may not be the best approach to protecting not only the DAO but also the members of these DAOs, you know, legally or whatever. And so I think in the near term, until we have like this kind of DAO recognized as a different type of organization, or probably many types of organizations, I do think that is important that we consider what, you know, how they should be used and applied and design them as such, because otherwise I think that a lot of these DAOs may not end up making it out on the other end because they weren't, you know, thoughtful, I guess, about what category of legal structure or whatever they may fit into. And so we're doing our best to try and help DAOs figure that out, and we'll continue to do so.
Yeah. So you've been in this space now for, you said, over 8 years now, and, you know, you've obviously seen things change in the last few years. So just curious where else you think this space needs to evolve into, what has met your expectations, what hasn't met your expectations, how do we progress from here?
DAOs, not Web3 in general, you mean?
I guess it could be whatever, DAOs, Web3. We can make it open-ended.
Sure. You know, I've been around long enough to see a number of cycles, to know that things kind of come up and then they come up again years later in a different form. And when they come up in a different form, they actually evolve. And that's what actually takes them to the next level. So I think that DAOs are having that moment, or about to have that moment. Because, you know, as I mentioned, like, DAOs are not a new concept. Like, they originally came up in 2016, which was, you know, gosh, 6 years ago at this point. But they're now having kind of this moment where I think that people are starting to see all the different, designs and applications of them. I think in a similar way, NFTs, you know, had that as well last year. And even, you know, to this day, where NFTs were not a new concept. I mean, they originally came out in 2017, 2018, but they kind of, you know, sort of, I don't know, went through a trough of disillusionment in 2018, 2019, but then they came back in 2020 in a different way. And now they're really exciting and transformative because they've taken a different shape. And I think DAOs are going to be similar, right? So a lot of the assumptions of DAOs from previously, namely, even in the name itself, decentralized autonomous organization, I think that we are going to see that all of those words are tested, actually. Doesn't mean that it's going to go away, because I think that like the name or the acronym DAO is very sticky. Like, for example, are all DAOs going to be decentralized? Or rather, can DAOs live on a spectrum of decentralization? Are all DAOs autonomous? Or will DAOs exist on a spectrum of automation? Are all DAOs organizations, or might DAOs not just be organizations? Could they be other things? I think that is, I know that's very broad and kind of nebulous, but I think that that's what's going to happen in the next couple years with DAOs. And as we start to look at these things with a fresh lens and start with different assumptions about what DAOs actually are. I think it's going to open up the design space for them. I think it's going to open up the number of applications for them. And as a result of that, I think that DAOs are going to start to make a huge impact in ways that previously the space might not have expected.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you're so right. I've always thought like the name DAO was a little bit misleading. And I do agree. I think they will all live in some sort of spectrum. But to your point, the name's already sticky. I don't think it will ever change, but I do think the literal meaning of those words will definitely look different in application. So yeah, it's interesting. Awesome. No, thank you so much. And then what's next for Syndicate? What are you up to? I know we've talked about the investment clubs. Is there anything else you want to highlight? How are you thinking about pushing things forward within the org? Anything you want to share for us here?
Yeah, I mean, it's still super early, right? We just launched our first tool less than a week ago.
Yeah,
and
congrats.
And we're seeing just tremendous kind of growth over the last several days in terms of new DAOs and communities created on Syndicate. And we're starting to just see all these like really amazing things that these DAOs want to do, whether it's like investing in NFTs together, or they're in some cases taking on more social missions, like investing more women or investing in more musicians to, you know, enter Web3. And that is really inspiring. And we can't wait to see all the other things that, you know, these groups will do. I think we've got a lot of work to do, you know, obviously to continue to kind of respond to those users' requests and needs. We're seeing lots of different features that people want added to our tool, new capabilities added to our tool. So we've already been working on a number of those, but you know, we're learning about new things every day, and so we're trying to keep up with all of those requests. At the same time, we've already been working on three other products, other tools over the last number of months in private beta with different communities. And some of those are at different levels of maturity. We are planning to release those in the coming month or months. And we're really excited about those because I think that similar to our investment club tool, these other tools that we're building are going to continue to radically kind of democratize these tools to build communities, for communities to invest in what matters to them. And I think that we're super excited to, you know, get these things right and release them to as many people and as many communities in the world so that they can start to be a part of, you know, this process of building this new internet that is emerging. So, you know, more to come on that front, but we're really working super hard behind the scenes on those things.
So then on that point, is one of your goals to be like the premier location if people want to spin up communities and they need a bunch of tools and to set that up? Is Syndicate trying to just be that central place for folks to do that? Or is that just a byproduct of you sort of feeling the needs for your community?
You know, we're very user driven, I guess. And so we'll always, I guess, respond and build with our users and with our customers in whatever direction that they take us. I think for now, we're really focused on democratizing the tools to invest. And I think that like what we're finding is some really profound ideas around what even that means. So typically people think of investing in terms of capital and money, right? That's how it's viewed traditionally. But I think that investing can be broadened in terms of its definition to encompass things beyond just financial capital. There can be things like social and human capital that is invested and can be invested. And so there are a number of, I guess, ideas and tools and opportunities that we are currently exploring and building with different communities to account for that, because I think that in this world where capital is infinite and effectively commoditized, things like social capital and human capital are actually going to be even more important from an investing perspective than just money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that makes total sense. Thanks for sharing that. And then just like, you know, lastly, what are some of your favorite DAOs? Any DAOs you want to highlight for us that we should know about, or do you love them all equally?
It's like choosing what your favorite, you know, baby is. That's impossible. I mean, I'm really inspired by these DAOs that have actually, in many cases, just come to us organically to work with us. that are focused on empowering more women. You know, I've been in crypto for 8 years, and even before crypto, actually, for almost a decade prior to that, I was a part of either women CEO companies or primarily women led companies. And that's really important to me for a variety of reasons. I mean, for women, but also just for the space in general and for other communities that deserve to be a part, deserve to have a seat at the table. You know, it's really important because if we're building this internet for the entire world, we need the entire world to be a part of the investing and building process. And I think that it is time for communities like More Women and other, you know, groups to start to become a bigger part of this process. And I now see the pathways for that. And so I'm really, really inspired by those groups. You know, I think there are too many names to name, but some of them that we've been working with include like this group called BFF DAO. There's one called EVE. There's another one called Women in VC DAO, the Council DAO, We3 DAO, and so many others. And so I'm excited actually for them to actually start collaborating, which is already starting to happen, and for them to inspire more communities like them, either directly or even adjacent to them, so that, you know, we can all build this world together. It's not only important, but necessary, in my opinion.
Thank you for saying that. And I agree with that. It's one of the reasons I reached out to you, because I'd been observing your activity for a while online. And I was like, he talks the talk and he walks the walk. And I want to just reach out and talk to you. So I thank you for your time today. And yeah, I'll link all those resources in the show notes. They all seem pretty amazing. Any other recommended resources for anyone who's looking to learn more about Syndicate, DAOs, the space in general?
You can follow us on Twitter at Syndicate DAO. You can also go to our website, syndicate.io. We have tons of resources that we've been making available from us, but also various, you know, external resources that we've found over the years that have been really helpful to people when thinking about like embarking on this journey of starting a DAO. You know, we're trying to educate as much as possible and make as much information as transparent and available, so that, you know, we really help democratize this not only tool but also knowledge. So yeah, you can start there. There are a lot of other great things. Like, for example, Andreessen Horowitz has this DAO canon on their website, which has links to a whole bunch of resources that have been created by others in the past couple of years, actually, on DAOs. And so I think those are two really great places to start. But obviously, like, you know, so much happens on a daily basis that Twitter's obviously a great place. Actually, another one is called DAO Masters. This was a community effort recently that a number of people created. And so it's actually creating like open source tools and information around, you know, different DAO kind of things. And so that's also a great resource that has come up recently from the community.
Fantastic. I will link all those. This has been amazing, Ian. Thank you so much for your insights and your time today. Really, really appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for all the work that you're doing. I think, you know, we're all part of this together. And the only way that we're going to be able to, you know, achieve our collective mission is together. So thank you for this opportunity, and excited to keep listening to this podcast over the years to come.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Lyde. Until next time.